Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, February 26, 2021. Coming up this hour,
the U.S. sell-off goes global. Team coverage from London, Singapore, and New York straight ahead.
Cryptocurrencies take a hit with Bitcoin on track for its worst week in a year.
The House prepares to pass stimulus, but a minimum wage hike is dealt a blow.
New York City schools have a positive COVID-19 test rate of less than 1%, while New Jersey watches the newest COVID-19 variant very closely. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshaw in sports. A good night for local teams. Wins for the Knicks, Nets, Islanders, and Devils.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Imagine your asset management firm's operational infrastructure as a competitive advantage. Let SEI show you how at seic.com/IMS.
And a recovery in global bonds spreading to U.S. stock index futures. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 10 points. Dow futures are down 4. NASDAQ futures up 34. The DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. The CAC in Paris down 0.4%. So is the FTSE 100. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 4%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 3.6%. 10-year Treasury up 13.32. Yield 1.47%. Yield on the two-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 61 cents at $62.93 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.8% or $14.40 at $17.61.20 an ounce. The euro, 1.2125 against the dollar. The yen, 106.40. Nathan.
Karen, the Wall Street sell-off is spilling overseas, but in Europe, it's not nearly as bad as yesterday's U.S. drop. Let's begin our global team coverage with Bloomberg's Danny Berger live in our London Bureau. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Nathan. Good morning, Karen. That's right. We are starting to see the sell-off that overnight was very ugly for Europe starting to ease. Now, if yesterday's sell-off was all about bond yields moving higher to a really quick degree, the fact that they're starting to come back down is likely what's giving these equity markets some aid. The German Bund, for example, the yield on there falling about 2 basis points. We've got a lot of comments from ECB officials over the past few hours saying they are going to be supportive. If higher yields cause a shock, they're going to step in to help. So that giving markets some comfort. So while we might see S&P futures up nearly 0.2%, I should say European stocks, they're still off about 0.5% for the wider index. The pain is really coming from the commodity sector. That's the one risk asset. We're still seeing a bit of a sell-off. So it's kind of that after effect from yesterday. So copper's down a lot, aluminum both down more than 1%. So we have a lot of miners and those kinds of companies that are falling in Europe. Live in London, Danny Berger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Danny, thank you. We're also seeing a sell-off in Asia. In fact, stocks in the region slumped the most since March. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. Japan's Nikkei 225 index closed down almost 4% in Tokyo, its biggest one-day fall since April, while Hong Kong's market was down more than 3% as tech players continued to tumble. An index of consumer stocks in China posted one of its worst weekly declines on record. Australian stocks fell the most in 6 months, while Australian bonds swung amid an unscheduled purchase operation from the RBA. Japan's benchmark hovered near its highest level since early 2016, as Governor Kuroda reiterated the BOJ isn't aiming to raise its yield target from around 0%. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. This all comes after yesterday's bond-fueled sell-off on Wall Street, but things are easing in the U.S. this morning. Let's get the latest live with Bloomberg's John Tucker. John?
And Nathan, U.S. futures right now mixed to higher. The 10-year Treasury yield back below 1.5%. It went as high as 1.6% yesterday. Well, tech has been the hardest hit sector, with the NASDAQ down almost 5.5% for the week. There's concern that accelerating inflation could trigger a pullback in support for the Federal Reserve. Right now, central bank officials say surging Treasury yields merely reflect optimism on the economy. Well, they say there are no plans to tighten policy prematurely. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Plenty of reaction this morning to the sell-off. Peter Shafrick, global macro strategist at RBC, says the market is looking to the Fed for answers.
the first leg of the bond market sell-off that we've seen was driven almost exclusively by inflation expectations. But about 2 weeks ago, that changed. First, real yields went up, and then yesterday, the short end went up. So, and I think this is really sort of where the market is essentially testing the central banks and saying, all right, we want you to see defend your targets rather than just talk about it.
Shafrick is just one of many pointing to central bank expectations as the reason for the sell-off. Ian Steely is International Chief Investment Officer for Fixed Income at JP Morgan Asset Management.
I think what was interesting yesterday was that the movement higher in yields was led by the five-year part of the curve. And the five-year part of the curve is obviously much more focused on what monetary policy is doing. And there, really, the market is questioning the Federal Reserve.
And let's check Treasury yields right now. The 10-year at 1.47%, the 2-year 0.14%, and the 30-year yield 2.25%.
We're also seeing Bitcoin tumble this morning. The cryptocurrency is on track for its worst weekly slide in almost a year. Still, Kathy Wood, founder and CEO of ARK Investment Management, remains bullish. She says the potential market cap for Bitcoin could be trillions of dollars.
When you aggregate all of these use cases for Bitcoin and assume a conservative allocation, let's say in the terms of cash or insurance policies, you do get into the trillions of dollars of market cap potential out there.
Kathy Wood made the comments at yesterday's Bloomberg Crypto Summit, and Bitcoin right now is at $46,215.
And now the latest on the pandemic. There's been a dramatic drop in the number of coronavirus hospitalizations. They plunged 72% from last month while the push to vaccinate gathered steam. And we may be just days away from getting another shot in the U.S. An FDA panel meets today to consider its recommendation for approving Johnson & Johnson's vaccine for emergency usage. Futures this morning, little changed. S&P futures up 2 points. Dow futures down 33. NASDAQ futures down 16. And the 10-year Treasury up 12 32nd, yield 1.47%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
All right, it's now 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in New York and around the world on this Friday morning. Good morning, Amy Morris.
Good morning, Nathan Hager. The relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia just got a bit trickier. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The U.S. Independent Intelligence Report has implicated Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The report has been classified, but reports are it will become declassified today. What can be done of it is yet to be seen, but what is known is that the Trump administration had most all the information and didn't want to release it. President Biden talked with Ken Salman earlier in the day, but whether this was discussed is not known. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says the state is watching the COVID-19 variant that's spreading through New York City very closely. He says it has not been found yet in New Jersey. Murphy says nearly 600,000 people have been fully vaccinated in New Jersey. New York City schools have a positive COVID-19 test rate of less than 1%. As middle schools have reopened to students for in-person instruction, the school system has administered about a 500,000 COVID-19 tests, and more than 30,000 teachers have gotten the vaccine. New York officials are opening 12 new community-based pop-up vaccine sites over the next few days. They're located in the Hudson Valley, New York City, and on Long Island. All the available appointments have already been filled for the three Hudson Valley sites. New York City's three new pop-ups are located in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and in Upper Manhattan. The Texas legislature held several committee hearings yesterday in its search for answers from power company executives to explain why there were blackouts during last week's deadly winter freeze. Curtis Morgan is the CEO of Vistra Corp.
When we did reach out, and this isn't blaming anybody, I just was surprised at the lack of urgency that I got from some of the officials, you know, the agencies.
He told lawmakers he alerted the Electric Reliability Council of Texas as soon as he learned there would not be enough power. Peter Gotti, the brother of famed Gambino crime boss John Gotti, died yesterday behind bars inside a federal correctional facility in North Carolina. The 81-year-old was serving a 25-year sentence on racketeering charges. He died of natural causes. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy. Thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshire.
Good morning, Nathan. The Nets, the hottest team in the NBA. They've got their longest winning streak since 2006 when they played in New Jersey. They made it 8 in a row with a blowout win in Brooklyn over Orlando. The Nets outscored the Magic in the second quarter by 22 and in the fourth by 17. They won by 37, 129-92. It's the 20th time this season the Nets have scored at least 120 points. That's a club record, and the season isn't half over yet. While the Nets win with their league-leading offense, the Knicks usually rely on their defense number one in the NBA, but Sacramento has the worst defense, so the Knicks uncharacteristically scored at least 38 points in three of the four quarters. They beat the Kings 140-121. Sacramento's ninth loss in a row. The Knicks have won five of the last seven. It's their first win with fans at the Garden. What a third period for the Islanders. They scored five times, four goals in a span of less than 4 minutes. Seven different goal scorers in a 7-2 rout of the Bruins. The Devils on a Pavel Zacha goal in overtime, 1-4-3 in Buffalo. Much has been made of the Mets' attempts to sign recently acquired all-star shortstop Francisco Lindor to a new contract heading into the final year of his deal, but so is Michael Conforto.
To be completely honest, I've been so focused on preparing myself for this season. I can't lie and say that I haven't thought about it, but my focus, I'm trying to keep my focus where it needs to be, and that's on this team.
Conforto entering his seventh season in the Mets outfield, hit .322 last year. The Mets' first exhibition game is Monday. The Yankees play Toronto on Sunday. John Stanshaw with Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. Watching futures swing between gains and losses this morning after yesterday's rout. Right now, S&P futures are up 4 points. Dow futures now down 13. NASDAQ futures lower by 10 points. 10-year Treasury now up 13 32nds, the yield at 1.47%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Clouds give way to some sunshine today. Friday highs in the low 40s. Rain tomorrow and Sunday. Weekend highs near 50 degrees. Right now, clear sky, 36 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And good morning, I'm Karen Moscow. A recovery in global bonds spreading to U.S. futures as markets return to firmer footing at the end of a week that saw the heaviest losses in the NASDAQ since the pandemic meltdown. The NASDAQ fell another 3.5% yesterday. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up about 8 points. Dow futures down 1. NASDAQ futures up 13. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 13/32nds, yield 1.47%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 64 cents at $62.88 a barrel. COMEX gold is down about 0.8% or $13.40 at $17.62 an ounce. The euro is at 1.2117 against the dollar, British pound 1.3934, and the yen is at 106.43. Today we are watching for reports on personal income and spending out at 8:30 Wall Street time, and at 10 it's consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A U.S. intelligence report implicates Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in approving the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. The report could be declassified as early as today. The IRS says tax refunds are going out a lot slower this year because of a late start. The IRS started processing income tax returns on February 12th. More than 2 weeks later than last year. The annual Conservative Political Action Conference kicked off last night with some notable no-shows. Those not attending the conference in Florida include Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, Mike Pence, and Nikki Haley. In sports, the Knicks, Nets, and Wizards win. On the ice, the Islanders beat the Bruins, the Devils and the Caps win. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Amy. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's get more on this market action this week. Matt Maley joins us now, Chief Market Strategist at Miller Tabak. Good to have you back with us, Matt. Thanks for being here. As we see a bit of a breather in equity futures this morning after the big plunge yesterday for bonds and stocks. What comes next?
Well, we'll have to see. It seems to be based on what's going on in the bond market. I mean, one of the things that, in the Treasury market, one of the things that Chairman Powell said this week, of course, it seemed to calm a lot of fears earlier in the week, was that, he's not worried about inflation. It's going to be transitory, and therefore we're going to let it run hotter. The thing is, if he's going to let it run hotter, that means he's going to let long-term interest rates hold up or rise further than people had been expecting. And so this is really no surprise that the stock market is seeing another hiccup here. We saw one about 3 or 4 weeks ago at the end of January when that whole GameStop thing kicked in. And it just shows that this market, which is priced for perfection, isn't necessarily going to get that. And people, I guess my point is the risk-reward scenario is definitely shifting towards the side of risk, and people should, take that into account in their investment thinking.
Well, what do you think sparked the sell-off in bonds yesterday, particularly after the comments from Chairman Powell this week?
Well, again, it's funny because people kind of initially thought it was a dovish comment, but for the bond market, it's negative. I mean, at least for long term rates, if he's willing to stand for higher inflation, that means that higher long term interest rates are going to move higher. And the one thing I would say though, there's these reports out there saying that don't worry, it was really more of a technical thing, and that was almost certainly true. We had supposedly there was some unwinding of positions, but that's the problem we face right now, that there's a massive amount of leverage in the marketplace. We see that with the margin debt at all time highs, and whenever you have a hiccup in the market, when you have excess levels of leverage, you unwind that leverage, you get forced selling, and that's what happened. We saw it again at the end of January with that GameStop fiasco. Now we're seeing it in the bond, due to moves in the bond market. And whenever you have a lot of leverage, you have the risk in the marketplace go up. And I just think that people should, take a little bit of a few chips off the table. It raises the odds that we'll get a correction, which, of course, corrections are normal and healthy.
Right. Well, if you think people should take chips off the table, where do you think they should be positioning them now?
Well, it's interesting. I think the one thing we need to do is take really raise a little bit of cash. However, as the market comes in, you want to be going into the groups that have been acting well lately. In other words, I turned positive on the energy stocks and the bank stocks back in late September, early October of last year. The thing is, they've had huge runs and they're getting a little overbought. So I don't know what I'd be chasing there. You can still continue to nibble. I'm going to say completely. You don't want to use those necessarily to take a lot of profits, especially for long-term investors. But to buy those on any kind of weakness, I just think interest rates are going to go higher. That's bullish for bank stocks. And I do think that the commodities are going to move. We've seen a significant change in trend and the long-term trend for commodities. That's going to be good for energy stocks and other commodity-related equities.
In our last minute here, if interest rates do indeed continue to go higher, does that move equity valuations back more to fundamentals as opposed to liquidity driving the price in stocks right now?
Yeah, I think it does. And again, that raises the risk of what's going on in the marketplaces. But it's okay. I mean, the point is, we do know, because of Fed, because of their massive liquidity programs that they injected 11 months ago, took the market up well above its fundamental value. Now that the economy is obviously picking up significantly from where it was in April and May of last year, so it's playing catch up to the market. But now we're going to have a situation where we don't have the stock market rising quite as fast, even if the economy is improving. So on a long-term basis, this is good, and that's why you want to buy those things on weakness. But it does leave us to risks of a correction of 10% or more, especially with the amount of leverage in the marketplace.
Matt Maley, thanks for this. Hope you have a good weekend. Matt Maley is Chief Market Strategist at Miller Tabak with us this morning after the deep sell-off in stocks and the rout in bonds yesterday. This morning, futures looking for a bit of direction. S&P futures are up by 6.5 points. Dow futures down 9. NASDAQ futures have been swinging between gains and losses this morning. Right now, they are higher, but little changed, really. Higher by only about 4 points right now. 10-year Treasury up 13 30 seconds. The yield 1.47% on the 10-year note. 2-year yield 0.14%. The 30-year 2.25%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Land Rover, introducing the 2020 Land Rover Defender, Motor Trend's 2021 SUV of the year. Put the Defender's capabilities to the test at your local Land Rover retailer. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Global bond markets are looking to recover from yesterday's aggressive sell-off that drove steep losses in treasuries and stocks. We get the latest live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
Karen, 10-year treasury yields are now back below 1.5%. They went as high as 1.6% Thursday. S&P futures, they're up about 7 points following yesterday's sell-off, which saw the NASDAQ plunge 3.5%. There's concern that accelerating inflation could trigger a pullback in support for the Federal Reserve. Right now, central bank officials say surging treasury yields merely reflect optimism on the economy. Well, they say there are no plans to tighten policy prematurely. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Now, despite yesterday's sell-off, we are not at the pain threshold for stocks just yet. That's according to Bank of America's head of U.S. equity and quantitative strategy, Savita Subramanian.
We're still in an environment that is relatively attractive for long duration stocks and for equities overall. But I think when we get to, you know, a three handle on the 10-year, that's where a lot of our indicators suggest that stocks could feel a little bit of pain.
Cryptocurrencies are also feeling the pain. Bitcoin is on track for its worst week in almost a year. Still, MicroStrategy Chairman Michael Saylor remains bullish.
And in an expansionary monetary environment, you want scarce assets. And the scarcest asset in the world is Bitcoin.
And Saylor made the comments at yesterday's Bloomberg Crypto Summit. Checking Bitcoin right now, it's at $46,655.
And turning to Capitol Hill, Democrats have suffered a major blow in their push for stimulus. The bill looks like it will not include a provision to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Republican Senator from Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn, says the hike would have hurt small business.
I talk to small business owners every single day that have really not taken any salary or any revenue from their business because they are trying to keep people employed during this pandemic.
Blackburn spoke with our chief Washington correspondent, Kevin Cirilli, on Bloomberg Sound On. You can catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. on Bloomberg Radio. Coming up today, Kevin speaks with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
S&P futures up 9 points, Dow futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up about 14 right now, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%, 10-year Treasury up 13 30 seconds, the yield 1.47%. Straight ahead, we have a look at your local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Amy Morris for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Amy.
Nathan, the U.S. military has carried out an airstrike in eastern Syria along the border with Iraq, the first military action of the Biden presidency. Officials say the airstrike is in retaliation against Iranian-backed militia for the deadly rocket attack in Iraq last week that killed a coalition contractor and wounded several Americans. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
We're confident that that target was being used by the same Shia militia that conducted the strikes.
Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the attacks destroyed multiple facilities at a border control point used by a number of Iranian-backed militant groups. New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker is defending his policies concerning nursing homes and the coronavirus. Dr. Zucker testified remotely in front of state lawmakers, answering questions about the now-canceled March 25th directive requiring nursing homes to accept COVID-positive patients. Zucker denied the policy led to more deaths.
I stood by it in July. I stand by it now, that we know that it's in the community and it is going to end up in the facility.
Cuomo administration officials argue the decision was based on limited hospital space. Governor Murphy is taking the next step for the legal sale of marijuana in New Jersey. Murphy is making final picks for a cannabis regulatory commission. The panel will be regulating the industry along with allocating licenses to new dispensaries and growers. Their duties will include regulating both medical and the 21 and older legal pot market. The New York State Common Retirement Fund says it is pushing companies to boost their ethnic and gender diversity and will vote against any directors who fail to act. The New York pension, which has $248 billion in assets, plans to file shareholder proposals supporting increased diversity on corporate boards. It will also seek better disclosures about the gender and ethnic breakdown of companies' employees. A New York City police commissioner who kneeled with protesters outraged by the death of George Floyd, but was also an architect of the department's forceful response to the demonstrations, is retiring after nearly four decades on the force. Terrence Monahan will become a senior advisor to Mayor Bill de Blasio, aiding in New York's coronavirus recovery. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thanks. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stanshauer.
The Knicks, Nathan, are the NBA's worst team offensively, the best defensively. Surprising to see them win last night at the Garden with a scoring outburst. Knicks had 77 points at the half. They won 140-121, far and away the most points they've put up this season. That's because Sacramento allows the most. The Kings have lost nine in a row. Rookie Emmanuel Quickly, 25 points in just 20 minutes off the bench. He made all 12 of his free throws. He shoots those at 94%. 24 off the bench for Alec Burks. Julius Randle with 21 and 14 rebounds. In Brooklyn, Nets made it eight wins in a row, a 129-92 drubbing of Orlando. Kyrie Irving scored 27. He and James Harden teamed up for 16 assists. Kevin Durant again didn't play. He was only played once during the win streak. Islanders and Bruins, 2-2 in the third period. The Isles then scored five times against ex-Islander Yaroslav Halak. They won 7-2. Boston had not allowed five goals in a game all year. Devils ended a three-game losing streak, 4-3 win in overtime at Buffalo. Gerrit Cole will obviously be the Yankees' opening day starter, and Aaron Boone says Gary Sanchez will be his catcher. Last season ended with Cole pitching only to Kyle Higashioka, but Cole thinks Sanchez will be better defensively this year.
I didn't speak to him specifically on some of the changes he made, but I mean, he's super focused in camp, and he's communicating to the pitchers both in the bullpens and in the live BP. So seems to be on the right track and taking steps forward.
Of course, Sanchez needs to also improve at the plate. He batted 147 last year. Yankees and Blue Jays exhibition baseball Sunday in Tampa. John Stanshauer, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
There are still many commercial real estate opportunities in New York these days. They include jumping into spaces occupied by bankrupt tenants. Landlord Edward J. Minskoff Equities recently arranged for spin studio chain Cycle Bar to take over an Astor Place location formerly occupied by Flywheel Sports, which filed for bankruptcy in September. Middletown's Mattabesset Canoe Club is closed, but two business owners are hoping to turn it into a unique kind of restaurant. Two business owners are proposing a restaurant that would use drones to deliver food to boats on the Connecticut River. Well, the rocker Jon Bon Jovi has relisted his rockin' New Jersey estate. The six-bedroom residence is set on 15 acres with 700 feet of river frontage. The posh property in Red Bank has previously been listed as price upon request, but it's returned to the market with an asking price of $20 million. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WBBM listeners in Chicago that engine trouble on a Boeing 777 in Russia is just adding to the company's headaches.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Texas towns and cities worry about sky-high power bills from the deep freeze.
I'm Caroline Hepcon, Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We are reporting on the COVID Recovery Commission led by Tesco's John Allen, calling for the Johnson government to define and deliver on global Britain, starting with the budget.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting two suburbs are considering a tax-sharing deal to support the expansion of a construction products manufacturer.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. We're also watching for earnings from Airbnb. The company did report fourth quarter revenue that blitzed analyst estimates. The story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Airbnb released its financial results for the first time as a public company, and it benefited as people traveled over the holiday season despite rising COVID-19 cases and highlighting how vacation home rentals are dominating the travel rebound. Airbnb, which helped pioneer the home-sharing vacation model, has fared better than its rivals as travelers took advantage of work-from-home opportunities, road tripping to nearby mountain villages or beach towns, and often booking longer stays than usual. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. Today, a full plate of economic indicators. More from Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Economists are forecasting a robust showing in January's data on household income and spending following the government's latest round of pandemic aid. Spending was down in November and December as new outbreaks of COVID-19 swept the nation. Also today, data on January merchandise trade. In December, exports rose to pre-pandemic levels. The University of Michigan, meantime, reports on consumer sentiment in late February, and economists are forecasting a tepid reading. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Vinny. Futures back in the green at the moment. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Clouds give way to sunshine today. It's going to be chilly, low 40s. Tomorrow and Sunday, looks like rain. Highs for the weekend near 50. Right now, 36 and clear in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures showing some signs of resilience after a bruising sell-off sparked by fears about inflation and rising borrowing costs. The Nasdaq coming off its worst loss since October. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are higher, up 6 points. Dow futures are down 10. Nasdaq futures up 6. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 13/32. The yield 1.47%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down about 0.6% or 35 cents at $63.18 a barrel. COMEX gold down about 0.7% or $11.60 at $17.63.80 an ounce. The euro 1.2125 against the dollar. British pound 1.3909 and the yen 106.37. And GameStop continues its advance up 7.2% in early trading. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, an Iraqi militia official says a U.S. airstrike in Syria has killed one militiaman and wounded a number of others with a powerful Iranian-backed Iraqi group. It is the first military action of the Biden presidency. More Americans will be able to qualify for unemployment insurance thanks to new guidance from the Labor Department. It expands eligibility to people who are afraid of contracting coronavirus on the job. The Senate is debating the confirmation of a transgender official to the Biden administration. Dr. Rachel Levine is Biden's nominee for assistant health secretary. In sports, the Knicks, Nets, and Wizards all win. And on the ice, the Islanders beat the Bruins. The Devils and Caps win. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy. Thank you. We're just about 5:49 on Wall Street now. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. As we continue to assess the rout in the bond market we saw yesterday, we're joined by Tom Porcelli this morning, Chief U.S. Economist at RBC Capital Markets. Good morning, Tom. Great to have you with us as we're seeing a bit of a breather now in the bond market. Treasury's picking up this morning. Do you think it's done?
So here's the challenge. Well, first of all, sorry. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to be with you. And, here's a challenge. I think that there's always a sort of natural buyers for treasuries, right? I think at certain yield points or yield ranges, those buyers will tend to view treasuries as, sort of a good time to enter, to buy. I think the challenge right now is I think a lot of those sort of natural buyers I think they've stepped to the sidelines. None of these buyers are going to step in, you know, when you have these sort of parabolic moves. So I think that means that the ceiling, you know, there's almost always, there's a natural ceiling as a way to think about these buyers over yields. I think that ceiling has been lifted a bit. So I think that you could continue to rise from here. I mean, let me be clear. Look, you're speaking to an economist right now, right? I'm not a strategist or a technician.
Sure.
I'm just simply saying that in the context of, some money sitting on the sidelines because of the sort of the kind of move that we've had, I think that the ceiling is probably a little bit higher than it otherwise would be. So I think we could easily drift north of 150. I don't think that's necessarily, you know, based on fundamentals. I mean, we should get into the fundamentals at some point here. But I'm just simply saying that in the near term, I think that there's that element that needs to be considered. And so, yeah, I think yields could continue to rise. But I don't think that this is it for the year. You know, it's not like I think we're off to the races here. I mean, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we get some scaling back, again, just on the back of, you know, fundamentals finally kicking back in and people realizing, hey, well, the Fed's not going to react right away. But I think for the time being, in the short term, yeah, you could rise here.
Well, what do you think is sparking this sentiment that seems to be taking hold in markets that the Fed is going to step in sooner than they've been saying? I mean, the messaging from Powell is that they're not thinking about raising rates.
So, you know, you, again, for people who are listening who don't know our general view, I mean, we've been pounding the table on that for a while, right? I mean, we've been saying for quite some time that, you know, this was going to be a much better year economically. There's going to be, you know, much more inflation than is appreciated. And as a result of all of that, the Fed is going to react much sooner than is appreciated. When we put out, it's funny, when we put out our year ahead view, a few months back now, our view was that all those things, right? You know, growth would be stronger, inflation firmer, but that, you know, the market would not embrace those things right away. So the market is now embracing them right away. Right? I think that's the one thing that has really surprised us. I mean, people really are buying into this narrative that that we, and I'm sure others have been pushing as well, that, you know, you're really going to have this good, strong growth year. And so it's all conspired at the sort of the same time. And I think this is obviously one of the catalysts that's pushing yields higher. Interestingly enough, I mean, I know everyone's focused on 10-year yields. I actually think that there's still a lot of room in the very front end of the market, because if all of those things materialize, right, if the strong growth, the strong inflation, if the faster Fed materializes, then you have a lot of heavy lifting to do in the front end of the market. So I think at some point, I know everyone is, you know, enamored with the curve steepener idea, but our view is that the curve is probably going to wind up flattening at some point over the course of the year. Again, we don't think it happens early on. Our view had been that the curve would steepen early in the year. But if we think as the year progresses and the Fed does come into play, that you're actually going to wind up seeing the curve flatten. Now, again, let's just be clear again for all listeners here. We expect yields will continue to rise across the entire curve. We just expect it will be led more by the front end than the back end as we get, you know, sort of further into the year.
Only about a minute left here, Tom, but there's a lot of discussion, of course, about whether the economy is going to run too hot if stimulus passes. It looks as though stimulus is going to pass. What's your view on that?
Yeah, so, you know, look, I'll simply say this if we only have a minute. You know, we had been running with a pretty strong growth profile over the course of the full year. You know, we're looking for about 6.5% growth. To get to higher rates of growth, it's really, really easy. And I'll just give you, in our short time, I'll give you a great example of what I mean. If you look at, in our base case, that 6.5% growth, we do not include any saving drawdown, and we are not including any makeup for lost 2020 spending. If you do include some of those things, like some makeup for that lost 2020 spending and a 20% drawdown in savings, just as an example, my 6% could become 11%. I mean, think about that, right? I mean, you can get to outrageously strong growth numbers in the United States without really, you know, being too aggressive with your assumptions. So I think that's what people are going to need to start to entertain.
Tom, always a pleasure. Thank you for this. Tom Porcelli is Chief U.S. Economist at RBC Capital Markets. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The Biden administration wants to ensure that the nation's smallest firms benefit from the payroll protection program. For the next 2 weeks, only businesses with fewer than 20 employees can apply for loans. The CEO of Costco will testify today at a Senate Budget Committee hearing on whether taxpayers should subsidize poverty wages at big corporations, and the American Institute of CPAs says the IRS should announce by Monday whether the April 15th tax filing deadline is being extended.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now let's turn from law to history. 2020 was a year marked by the pandemic, political turmoil, and the fight for racial justice. As we celebrate Black History Month, let's also remember the push for racial equality that helped define the past year. Throughout the protests, demonstrations, and calls for change, Bloomberg Radio spoke to many prominent figures on the issue. Here with more is Bloomberg's Michael Barr in this special report.
Social media has a strong presence in the movement for social equality. From forming protests to engaging globally, it has spurred a movement. TJ Adeshola, head of U.S. sports for Twitter, says the platform has helped cultivate a movement for change.
There's so many examples of folks who understand the power of their platform and the power of Twitter to amplify that platform. That's where I get a lot of excitement, man, knowing that we can equip people to drive change.
As more athletes find their voice, Adeshola believes it can be the change for them as he hoped it could be.
When I thought of the business of sports, I didn't think of anybody who looked like me, right? And I didn't see anybody who looked like me per se. So as my career has kind of evolved, one of the priorities that has continued to be front of mind is how can I equip young men, young women, particularly young men and women of color, to use this tool in a way that can positively impact their lives.
While the fight for social equality continues, Adeshola sees that not only his platform, but many others can bring about a positive reckoning.
Social media is very powerful. Twitter specifically is a really, really powerful tool. Within a few keystrokes, you can reach the world.
The question now is, will the social media world listen as we celebrate Black History Month? Michael Barr, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Michael Barr, thank you. Futures this morning, they're little change to lower now. S&P futures down a point. Dow futures down 57, and NASDAQ futures down 33. 10-year Treasury up 16 30 seconds. The yield 1.46%, and the yield on the two-year 0.14%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.7% or 42 cents at $63.11 a barrel. Still ahead on Bloomberg Radio, a check of business headlines and the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.